Hello, I'm Ray Reich, founder and CEO of RevOps Squared, and your host of the Metrics That Measure Up podcast. We talk to a wide variety of B2B, SaaS, and cloud thought leaders, executives, investors, and people just like you to discuss the metrics and benchmarks they use to make metrics-informed decisions. Now on to today's show. Welcome to today's episode of the Metrics That Measure Up podcast. Today, we are joined by Paul Raitzer, the founder and CEO of the Marketing AI Institute, and also author of the Marketing Artificial Intelligence book published in 2022. We'll be covering three main topics with Paul today, even though we could spend 3 hours on this. The first topic will be the history of AI in B2B marketing, what I call BC. Before ChatGPT, the current state of AI and B2B marketing, how's it being utilized and what's the impact on B2B marketing organizations? And then third, we're going to ask Paul to bring out his crystal ball and talk about the future of AI, both for and on B2B marketing and marketers. So with that, Paul, can you take a moment to give a brief overview of your journey to becoming a guest on the Metrics That Measure Up podcast?
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm looking forward to the conversation. I actually started out of journalism school. So I started a marketing agency out of journalism school, spent 5 years there, then started my own agency in 2005. We became HubSpot's first partner and the kind of the origin of their partner program in 2007. And then in 2011, I started writing the Marketing Agency Blueprint, which was my first book on how to build a modern marketing agency. That was the year right around the same time that IBM Watson won on Jeopardy. And so when I finished the manuscript to my first book, I actually started out of curiosity trying to understand Watson and how it worked and if there was potential applications to what we were doing in marketing, specifically marketing strategy and budget allocation. And so I just started spending all of my free time trying to understand artificial intelligence. And that led to my second book in 2014, which was the Marketing Performance Blueprint, which is about talent, tech, and strategy. And in the technology section, there is a very small component that is about artificial intelligence and my theory that we would eventually build an intelligence engine that would intelligently automate marketing strategy. And that became the basis for all of my talks. Everyone just basically wanted me to do these talks on AI. We eventually, in 2016, created the Marketing AI Institute to continue our research and to start publicly sharing everything we were learning about AI. And I figured if there was enough people interested in the topic, we'd eventually turn it into a business. And that's what happened in 2019. I spun it off as its own company out of my agency. And we launched our marketing AI conference and eventually our online education platform. I then sold my agency in 2021 and have been dedicated to AI ever since that time, you know, really focused on the AI Institute, which is a media event and education company. It's kind of the simplest way to think about it.
Well, one of my first questions was going to be, what was a catalyst for the Marketing AI Institute? Yeah. And you've already answered that question for me. So let's start with, you know, it's interesting. A good friend of mine, his name is John Elder. He had a digital advertising agency called Heat, and they were the ad agency for EA, Electronic Arts.
Yeah.
And did that for about 10 years. And we know how, you know, FIFA became such a big hit for them. But he sold that to E&Y. And about 2 years ago, he started a digital AI ad agency, Okay. Kind of ahead of its time. So I need to connect you and John someday.
Yeah, for sure.
A little bit about that journey over the last 3 years since you sold your agency. You've done nothing but Marketing AI Institute since then. Well, I should say nothing. That's been your primary vocation.
Yeah.
How's it evolved over the last 2 to 3 years? And was ChatGPT, was that seminal moment, or was there a lot of innovation going on before that?
Yeah. So for me, the inflection point was 2021 spring. Two things happened. So one, Sam Altman, the co-founder and CEO of OpenAI, published a blog post called Moore's Law for Everything. And he talked about, you know, how AI was basically going to come for our ability to think and reason and create and the things that the average business leader wasn't thinking of at the time, venture capital firms, SaaS leaders. I was talking to them. They weren't realizing what was about to happen. And then the second thing, about a month after that, I was reading Genius Makers by Cade Metz, New York Times AI writer. And I had been for all the time I'd started studying AI back in 2011 until that moment. So 10 years, I had this bit of a, what I would call the Fermi paradox. So, you know, Fermi looked up at the sky a long time ago and said, oh my gosh, this vast universe, how is it that we're the only intelligent life out there? And so that was the paradox. It's like, it seems like life should be everywhere and yet we're it. And I felt that way with AI. I kept looking around for 10 years saying, where is all the AI? Why aren't these companies doing it? Why aren't the SaaS companies building it into their products? And so as I'm reading Genius Makers, I realized why. And basically this breakthrough in 2011 by Jeff Hinton and his team on image recognition sort of like accelerated the deep learning movement. And you had this land grab for all the talent in the early teens by Microsoft and Google and Amazon and Apple. And everybody's like trying to go build research labs and Meta and Facebook. And so what I realized in spring of 21 was I had overestimated how quickly AI was going to get infused into all aspects of business, but I had underestimated the total impact it was going to have. So that was in that moment, literally, I was out for a walk. I came back and I told my wife, I'm selling the agency. Like it was spring break and I was done. Like I had to now go spend every moment of my life trying to connect the dots on where this was all going. So that was kind of leading up to, but then ChatGPT certainly was the moment for everyone else. It was when everyone else kind of woke up to what was going on. And I can tell that for a fact, because within 14 days, I started getting calls from presidents of universities, leaders of venture capital firms, friends running SaaS companies. Like everyone started calling me saying, oh my God, what do we do? And I thought that they had been doing things and I realized that they actually hadn't. So it was definitely an inflection point for the world, I would say, the business world.
Yeah. Let's go back to that 2016 to 2022 timeframe. Even though you had this revelation about how big it could be, the application of AI was in its infancy, especially in the marketing. So what were some of the top learnings or even frustrations you felt by the lack of adoption of AI techniques for B2B marketers pre-ChatGPT?
I would say, so, you know, certainly pre-ChatGPT, there was thousands of use cases for AI. We have an AI score tool that we built in 2018 that had 50 use cases. You could go through and rate them like in terms of value of intelligent automation. We've been publishing our state of marketing AI report for 2 years. We do it each year with Drift. That report has, you know, ratings of 50 use cases and how marketers evaluate them. So there was lots of ways to be applying it. A lot of them was around, you know, strategy and personalization, more like traditional kind of machine learning type applications where data in and then it, you know, produces outputs, recommendations, predictions. But there was lots of ways to use AI. The problem was the average marketer or business leader didn't understand the technology and wasn't taking the steps needed to proactively seek out that knowledge. So there was just this like, I think AI on its surface was very abstract and overwhelming. It started changing when DALL-E 2 came out in spring of 22, because now anyone could go for free test AI themselves. And then I think that was the ChatGPT moment was, I think the true innovation was the accessibility of AI that had a wow factor to it, where anyone could now go try something and be like, oh my gosh, like, this is actually real tech. And this is, they could start to visualize all the ways it could transform what they do for a living or what their teams do or their company does. And that to me was the breakthrough moment, was the accessibility of AI. Because prior to that, there weren't that many freemium products where you could go in and like experience it for yourself. And until you experience AI for yourself and you put your first prompts in and you get an output that is wow factor to you, you're not going to listen to the hype. Like it just doesn't make sense until you actually see it for yourself.
Yeah. In fact, I'm trying to become a prompt engineer, because the better you learn how to write prompts and train the AI on your behalf, the more efficient you can become. In fact, I just had Bessemer Ventures on the podcast and they do their annual State of the Cloud report. And State of the Cloud 2023, they have their 5 predictions. And prediction number 3 was, the benefits of AI will first accrue to the individual before it will to the companies. So I'd love to get your feedback on that. And do you kind of understand what they're saying? It's kind of like the marketer in a company will improve his or her efficiency before the company overall sees the benefit. What do you think?
Yeah, I could see that. So I wrote something in March called The Law of Uneven AI Distribution. And the basic premise is the benefits are there for all of us to be had, but there are certain variables that will determine the speed at which we realize those benefits. So the first is your understanding of the technology. So if you don't get it, you're not going to go seek it out. So if you're at the C level and you don't really comprehend this stuff, certainly you're not going to diffuse the value and benefits of it across your team if you don't even comprehend it yourself. So you may have individual writers or individual ad people within a company that are racing forward and using these generative AI tools, but you as the C-suite may just not be aware of it. So you have understanding, you have access to it. So I've talked to a lot of healthcare companies, schools, financial service companies, wealth management companies. They don't even allow to use ChatGPT. So they don't have access to see this technology. If you're in the EU, you don't even have access to Google's generative AI technology. Bard isn't even turned on in the EU. So you got a VPN into any of this stuff. So your access to it. And then the third variable is your acceptance of what you have to give up to get the benefit. So if you're going to, if there's these amazing AI tools that can be like, I think of Rewind is this company just raised a ton of money, and it's like perfect memory is what they're pushing. So as a consumer, it'll record everything in your digital life. So even, you know, 30 years from now, you'll be able to instantly recall and have an interaction with anything that's ever happened to you. You have to be willing to give up a lot of privacy and personal data to a company you might not know to benefit from that technology. So again, to your point and to the point of that study, at an individual level, you may be far more liberal with your data and your privacy and allow these things into your life. Where at a corporate level, you're going to have lots of layers, especially if you're in a highly regulated industry, or if you have a big law team, a team of attorneys within your organization that are trying to like have security and privacy being number one. So yeah, I could totally see that the individual could benefit more than the corporation in those instances.
And it was interesting. Their prediction number four was the next large value. And once again, we have a B2B SaaS audience primarily, Paul, yeah, would be to the application providers who are gathering all this transactional data about a particular process, whether that's a supply chain process or customer acquisition process, and being able to apply AI to providing better insights to optimize the process that they currently have been automating. So they think almost every B2B SaaS application will leverage the open APIs to make their application smarter and more insightful. Makes sense?
I could see that, but I also think a lot of B2B SaaS companies are going to get obsoleted really quickly. It's really hard to know what the moats are in B2B SaaS right now. It's hard for venture capital firms to make the right bets. It's hard for the SaaS leaders to know what's defensible. But I do think that it seems to be generally accepted that data and distribution are the two primary moats at the moment. So to your point, yes, I think that if you're a B2B SaaS organization or an investor in those organizations, and they have proprietary data that can be used to tune these generative AI models, think of like a Bloomberg GPT, where they took 40 years of financial data and built a proprietary thing that no one else is going to have. I do believe that the large language model is going to become the equivalent of a CRM in the future. So the LLM becomes the CRM, meaning the CRM is like the base of all business. I don't care if it's B2B, B2C, whatever, but like everything funnels through the CRM. I think the LLM will become that mission critical to organizations. And so if you're a SaaS company that has proprietary data and you have a large audience, like the distribution, then you have a massive advantage to become as defensible as possible and thrive in this environment.
It's something that Elon Musk has said for several years is that his AI, yeah, that's part of the Tesla secret sauce, but having 4 billion miles driven that's getting fed into his AI, you know, algorithms, that's the real competitive advantage to get to self-driving is they have so much more data. And I think it's probably true with, like you said, the CRM. If they have all this transactional data, they have the best opportunity to leverage the power of AI, right?
100%. Yeah. I mean, that's like, I always get it. It's so funny when I do talks, the first thing I get asked if I'm in a group of like CEOs and investors is like, what are you investing in? Like they immediately want to know like what stocks. And what I've been saying for like 7 years, I redistributed my entire portfolio like 7 years ago on this. I believed that the companies that had the data would win. And to your point, Tesla, in my opinion, was undervalued because it was being treated as a car company. It is not a car company. It is a data company that can be used to build the largest fleet of humanoid robots that we can fathom at the moment, because all those billions of miles of training data of cars gives them a worldview, which they can then embody into robots. So like, yes, Google, Amazon, Microsoft, they have tons of data. And so, yes, I think the winners will be the ones with the largest data sets that can be used to tune these models.
Paul, you took me someplace I wanted to go, and that is AI investing. So, you know, VC investing overall is down dramatically. Yep. It was almost down 40% in Q1, but still $20 billion of VC investments happened. 40% went into AI companies, right? So $8 billion in Q1 alone. So my question to you, because you've been following this for so long, where are the biggest bets being made in AI for B2B marketing? Where do you see a lot of investment, both from a company perspective, but also from a organizational perspective? Where do you see it being used?
Yeah, I don't know how you get funding right now if it's not for some sort of AI application. Like if you're a SaaS company and you don't have a clear roadmap for AI and you don't have a team of people capable of envisioning and executing on that, I'm not sure how you would even raise a round of funding right now. So when I started getting the calls from VC firms, like within days of ChatGPT coming out, that was the first thing I told them. I said, listen, I would immediately audit your existing portfolio and I would find out which of companies don't have a roadmap for AI and don't have someone on the team that can build it quickly. And then I would get someone on that team that can. And then I would not invest another dollar in SaaS unless you have a confidence in that company's capability to develop and execute a vision for smarter products. Because what, you know, going back to the law of uneven AI distribution, if you're in a law firm or a marketing agency or, you know, manufacturing, whatever it is, it could take years to be disrupted. It's going to happen. Like you're going to be obsoleted if you don't figure this stuff out. But in SaaS, it could literally happen overnight. We're seeing it already. I've talked to SaaS product teams at major publicly traded companies who are like throwing their arms in the air saying, we've been working on a feature for 6 months with a team of five people. And some college kid just built the thing over the weekend using Replit and like an OpenAI API. Like, what are we supposed to do? So you have these traditional product teams that don't think in exponentials. They're not sitting there thinking first principles of like, how do we disrupt this entire stack? They're just trying to get increased efficiency or like deliver the thing the customer wants. They're going to get blown away in this environment. So that's how I think about investing is like you have to really have the right people in the right seats at these companies if you're going to put serious money into them.
So what you're basically saying is what SaaS in the cloud was to enterprise software companies, AI will be to the majority of SaaS and cloud companies unless they really harness an AI first strategy.
Yeah, in my opinion, software doesn't exist in 3 years that isn't completely infused with AI. Like I just don't know how it would compete.
I think my next question, maybe I'm asking the wrong question because you just answered it. It's not the SVP of marketing who should be thinking about how they use AI for a B2B SaaS company. It's the CEO and the SVP of R&D and product that ought to first double down and over-index on AI. But let me go back to my B2B marketers audience. You're an SVP or CMO of a B2B SaaS company. You don't have product. You're responsible for awareness, engagement, pipeline, right? And driving revenue. Where do they start? Do you have a framework of how they should start thinking about adopting it?
Yeah, we teach two ways to think about this. So one is, I'll start with more of the director level and above approach, which is the problem-based model. And we teach this in the book. There's a whole chapter dedicated to this, and we have courses on these things. But basically, in the problem-based model, you think about your role, the KPIs you're responsible for, the big problems you're trying to solve each year, and say, okay, maybe there's a smarter way to try and solve these. So let's say it's audience growth or customer churn or you know, one of those kind of universal things, productivity of your team. And you start to look at that problem and say, okay, the problem statement is this, and the value to solve it is X. So what you want to do right away is say, okay, we fell short of our sales qualified lead goal for the third straight quarter. If we had hit it, it would have generated an additional $250,000 in revenue this quarter. So that gives you a problem statement and a value statement. And you start stacking these up. You can literally just put them into a spreadsheet, list all your problem statements, corresponding value statements, and then what's it worth to solve those over like 1, 3, 5 year time horizons. That'll help you start to prioritize the problems that you can then critically assess and say, okay, is there smarter technology to help us solve this? Is there a way to apply AI to this problem that maybe we can get further ahead than we have before? So that's the problem-based model. You're going to tackle maybe one or two of those a quarter or a half. You're not going to, you know, you're going to do 10 at once. So you're going to pick big problems worth solving. The other one that you can do right now or have your team do right now is the use case model. This is taking all the tactical things your team does. You can pick advertising, sales, communications, email, content creation, whatever it is, and say, okay, what are the tactical things we do? And are there AI tools that can help us do those more efficiently? So take podcasts, for example. Every time we publish a podcast, we're a B2B company. Every time we publish a podcast, there's like 21 steps involved, from the curation of the topics to the actual scripting, and then the recording, and then the transcription, and the summarization, the distribution, like all these things. We use AI for about half of those steps. We've gone from probably 15 to 20 hours per episode to probably 3 to 5 hours per episode. So that's it. So you could just take like where are all the time and the human resources going in from a use case level, and can we find ones that can save us 10, 20, 30% of time so we can redistribute those people to do some things that aren't getting done maybe.
Interesting. So you have the problem-based approach, you have the use case approach. I like that. Is that on your website? Do you have those frameworks there?
Yeah. So it's chapter 4 of the book. There is, and then in our online academy, it's part of our Piloting AI for Marketers series. There's a couple courses on those things, but yeah.
I want to make sure our audience has the name of that book. It's Marketing Artificial Intelligence, correct?
Yeah. And it's marketingaibook.com. And if you actually go there and scroll down the page, about halfway down, there's a free use case template you can download. So it's actually from the book, but it's just a spreadsheet basically that shows you kind of a mock-up of what it could look like to do a use case assessment for your team. And you're welcome to download that and use that.
Thank you. So one of the reasons when I first met you at the CMO Summit, right, I was, of course, riveted by the presentation and the content. It's like, wow, this guy started this, you know, almost 10 years ago before most people were thinking about AI for B2B marketing. But then I found out you were an Ohio boy like me. So I have to ask you this question because I do a lot of work with the Ohio State University's Business School and their Keenan Center for Entrepreneurship. I'm going to be at an event next week in New York with a lot of their recent graduates, a lot of those in marketing. So what advice do I give them? And I'm going to say it's coming from Paul, for them to become really relevant in helping shape AI usage in their companies. So that early career person who doesn't form strategies, but he or she is doing a lot of tactical work. What advice?
The thing I tell people is there's very few people in organizations, and I don't care what size or what industry, that actually understands this stuff. And there's not a lot of proactive work being done to create formal structures and processes to apply AI within organizations. So I feel like if you're a young professional and you're interested in this topic and you're intrigued to learn more and become competent at using these tools, I would raise your hand in your organization and say, listen, I would love to be a part of building an AI council. Like, you know, get a group of people together who are curious about this stuff. Maybe we meet once a week and we talk about tools we're trying or, you know, things that our company could be doing to take advantage of it. So I think there's an opportunity to continually educate yourself, to experiment with the technology so you can become competent and teach other people, but to raise your hand and become a leader within your organization. And again, I don't care if you're the intern, like people need to step up and just say, I'd like to be a part of figuring this out for our organization. How can I help do it? That to me is an incredible opportunity and one that just wasn't there when we were coming up. I mean, think back to my career. You didn't get to raise your hand when you were 22 years old or 25 and say, like, I want to be a part of figuring out the future of this company. That wasn't how things worked. Like, you paid your due. And now the leaders don't know what to do. And what I've seen in some organizations, some big organizations, is this is what has happened, is these young professionals have raised their hands and said, listen, I'm really interested in generative AI. I would love to figure out how to apply this to what we're doing on our marketing team. And a lot of times the CMOs, the VPs say, great, like, what should we be doing? What do you think? You know, it's just, you get familiar with this stuff, spend a week, 2 weeks, take a couple of online courses, read a book, test 5-10 different tools. You're going to be further ahead than 99% of the people in your company. And you can now create value at a very young age with, you know, not a ton of experience because it's such a new space.
I love that grassroots, bottoms-up approach. Okay, so I love frameworks. I was at Netscape in the early days, and I led the e-commerce group, and I brought in Jeffrey Moore to kind of help me with our go-to-market strategy using the framework and concepts from Crossing the Chasm, that okay. product lifecycle adoption curve. Yep. And you know you're going to get those early innovators, visionaries who just love to use technology, but then you got to get into that early majority and you risk falling into the chasm. Then there's the Gartner technology hype cycle. And if anybody doesn't understand that, they talk about having a trigger point for a new technology, or at least the awareness of new technology. And that's what ChatGPT was, in my opinion, for the consumerization of AI. But then you also then hit the period of inflated expectations. I think we're going into that period right now. But then you get the trough of disillusionment. A lot of investments don't pan out. They don't see the business benefit. So my question to you is, for that head of marketing or CEO that just thinks there's a lot of hype and he or she just doesn't get it, what's your advice to them of kind of not being too worried about you're going to make some incorrect bets, but you got to make some bets? How do you get them there?
Yeah, I mean, experimentation is the only way to figure this out. The thing I will say about the Gartner hype cycle, and I almost wonder if they need to rethink this framework, what happens if the technology exceeds expectations? So, you know, they're all about like, oh, there's a trigger, there's an innovation, then it's a peak of inflated expectations, then it doesn't work like it's supposed to, and then we kind of like slope. Well, what if the technology is exponential and it 10x's every 12 months? And what if like the first experience you have, like a GPT-4, blows your mind and the use cases for it are way beyond anything you fathomed? And now you're actually processing, well, how do I have to restructure my entire team, my tech stack, my business model? I don't know where that lives in the Gartner hype cycle. And I think that's actually more likely than it not meeting expectations. So what I'll show people when I do talks to like C-level, show them the demo of like Microsoft 365 Copilot, or what's going to happen when generative AI is infused into Google Workspace. And now all of a sudden, it's not one individual, but your entire organization that has generative AI capabilities baked right into the documents and tech stack that they use every day, with no training of what it's going to do or how to work with it. That's what I think is going to happen. Now, it's possible that what HubSpot's building or Salesforce is building with GPT, or what Microsoft or Google, maybe it doesn't work. And maybe it does hit the inflated expectation peak. And then we just kind of drop down. It's like, oh, that wasn't as cool as we thought it was going to be. I don't think that's the case, because the technology we're using, GPT-4 was 7 months old when it came out. Google has advanced technology they're not going to release because it's too good. You know, it has issues, it has limitations, but it's beyond what we're capable of comprehending right now. And so I think what's going to happen is the technology we're using today is the dumbest version of AI we will ever experience in our lives. It's only going to get smarter and more capable. And I don't think that the business world, society, government, education is even close to prepared for what the technology is going to do. And so that's actually like, I worry more about that we're not ready for how good it's going to be than that it doesn't meet our expectations.
I think the majority of the world doesn't understand the amazing advancements from 3.5 to 4.0 of ChatGPT.
Wild.
Right?
The creativity of the writing is, I mean, there's been a few moments after like 12 plus years of doing this where I've just sat back in my chair and be like, oh my God, like everything changed. DALL-E 2 was a moment for me like that, because it brought image generation, really good image generation, to the forefront. And GPT-4, ChatGPT to a degree, I felt that way, but GPT-4 was different. Like its reasoning capabilities, its creativity, like it's just not supposed to be that way. And as a writer, as a, you know, a strategist, it was just the moment where I was like, wow, like this is going in a totally new place and we're just not ready.
So I cannot believe our time together is, we haven't even scratched the surface, but because of the broad nature of the audience, I didn't want to go into too much detail about large language models, et cetera. But I do have this question for you. I think I'm a student of this industry. I read 3 to 4 hours a day, research, follow articles. But I must admit, Paul, I'm overwhelmed with how much information there is about artificial intelligence, even specific to my industry and my profession. Where do we go? Where can the audience go and say, here's two or three really good places to keep abreast of what's happening in the industry while not feeling overwhelmed with 28 different feeds?
Yeah, so I feel the same way every day. We have our Marketing AI Show podcast, which has become quite popular. And that's where we try and diffuse all this for people. So once a week, comes out every Tuesday morning, we basically go through and do three main topics, then rapid fire. So we're trying to kind of curate the most important things and provide some context for people. Me personally, the way I keep track of everything is I actually use Twitter alerts as probably my number one way to keep track. So I have the people that I've come to trust as like kind of the thought leaders, but also the people who are in the trenches building this stuff and willing to share and talk about. I think of like a Jan LeCun at Meta. People who are very active on Twitter and sharing their thoughts. Andrej Karpathy at OpenAI, you know, is another one. Greg Brockman at OpenAI, you know. So those people I have alerts set up for on Twitter. So if they announce anything, you know, instantly I know about it. And then what I'll do is when an announcement comes out, so like think about Microsoft Build. They just recently announced a bunch of really fascinating things, including their theory of how everything's going to be like a co-pilot. You know, what they did with GitHub Copilot, that it'll basically play that out every aspect of business and knowledge work. That's a really interesting concept. And so I'll go into my AI feed and say, well, what is everybody else thinking and saying about this? So to me, it's all about curating a list of people who you come to trust and see as sort of, I don't know about authority. I don't know if anybody's an authority, honestly, on this topic, but people who have interesting perspectives and are sharing them in real time. I would find those people and I would either subscribe to their newsletter, follow them and get alerts on Twitter, or try and find the few people who are doing a really good job of synthesizing all this information into like a weekly podcast or a weekly newsletter.
Really good advice. I've also been listening, and it's a hard thing to put a guest on a spot like this, but I like listening to Lex Fridman and some of the conversations he's had with Sam Altman, Max Tegmark, and I think Eliezer Yudkowsky.
Yep.
But they talk for 2 or 3 hours about this, and they just talk about the potential. Yeah, the risk, but also just the potential. Have you listened to any of those, Paul?
Every one of them. It's by... You have to, like, if you really want to go deep on this topic, it's probably one of the best sources other than reading books if they've written them. But he's done some very influential podcasts for me. Andrej Karpathy was actually a big one for me. He did that one in the fall. Noam Brown at Meta, who worked on the diplomacy product that they're developing or the research that they did. And Cicero. There's just he did one with Demis Hassabis, like Jan LeCun, Elon Musk, all of them. I would listen to all of them. They are a lot. It is 2 to 3 hours, but there's no way to better understand the depth and the complexity of this topic than to listen to those long form interviews.
Great. Well, thank you so much for your time. I want to give the audience a chance to get to know you just a little bit better with the three quick questions we ask every guest. And the first is, what CEO, company, or thought leader, right now we're talking about AI, yep, do you think some must follow right now? And you just mentioned a lot of names, but if someone could say, man, I don't have that much time, who's the one person they should be following?
So Demis Hassabis, who's the CEO of Google DeepMind, but Demis doesn't share as much as Sam Altman. So I would say those are kind of 1A and 1B to me. Sam is more transparent about his thoughts on where things are going. Demis is very selective in his appearances. But if Demis does an interview, I would listen to every one of them because I think he's going to have a big say in the future of humanity.
That's a good one. Okay, now this is going to be hard, but a tool that every company should be using, and specifically I'm talking about B2B marketers. I know there's so many great tools. It's like 20 come out every day. Is there a tool that you're like, yeah, it might be use case specific, but this is such a powerful one.
Yeah, from a B2B perspective, we're huge fans of Descript. So just Descript.com. We use it for podcast and webinar production. They have an amazing suite of AI tools baked right in. So that's like, it's core to what we do every day. So that would be my one.
And third question, I think you've already answered this, and that's, what advice would you give to an early career, recent graduate, right, who wants to be an influencer and ultimately even a B2B technology company founder? And it sounds like go right now and form a council and be the grassroots advocate in your company, right?
Yeah, I mean, for the foreseeable future, barring the arrival of artificial general intelligence or the commercialization of quantum computing, it's a pretty safe career bet to invest heavily in your knowledge and capabilities with artificial intelligence. I think that will be a great differentiator. And it's by the end of 2023, I think the demand for AI savvy professionals is going to skyrocket.
Well, unfortunately, we're out of time. How can people just kind of reinforce how they can follow you, what the website is? Just what's your best contact information?
Yeah, access to all the things we talked about would be marketingaiinstitute.com, the book, the online courses, the events, the newsletter, the podcast. It's all there. And then personally, I'm relatively active on Twitter, and then LinkedIn is probably my home base professionally. So, you know, reach out. I always love to hear, you know, and connection request. If you heard me on this show, be sure to, you know, accept that request and get connected there.
Great. Well, that's the end of today's conversation with Paul Raitzer, who's the founder and CEO of Marketing AI Institute, and also the author of the Marketing Artificial Intelligence book. Paul, thank you so much again for being our guest today.
Thanks for having me.
And to our listening audience, if you're enjoying the conversations we have, like what we just had with Paul around AI for B2B marketing, it would mean the world to us to go ahead and follow us on your favorite podcast app. Go ahead and give us that 5-star rating, not because we need that from a hubris perspective, but it amplifies the reach of the podcast. So if you like the content, it helps more of your peers and colleagues also hear the same content. Thank you, Paul, and thank you to the listening audience.
Thank you for listening to today's Metrics to Measure Up podcast. If you would like to learn more about B2B SaaS metrics and benchmarks, please visit revopsquared.com.